The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talman, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
This is Tony Bemis,
Matt Anders,
and Mary Tomich,
and this is episode 123.
Colonel Kerfluffle.
Kerfluffle? Does that have to do with the Case Evers incident on the current Linux kernel?
Yes, it does. That kind of exploded late this week,
didn't it? Yeah, it did. Linus suspended Case Evers.
Wow. System D guy.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because he doesn't ever clean up his trash.
Huh.
He leaves it for everybody else, and the one guy was actually going to hide debug in the kernel because systemd puked on it. If you turn debug on in the kernel, systemd just totally pukes, won't boot.
Oh.
And because it captures it, and the guy was going to hide it, and Torvalds goes, "Hide it! Oh, we're not hiding it!" Except I don't think he said that, but I don't remember exactly what he said, but he was vehemently that it was Caseever's thing to fix, and he had to fix it, and that's it. We're not taking any more commits from Case Evers till he cleans up his trash.
Really?
Wow. It was
heated, man.
Very heated. You know, and then I look at my little BSD thing and it's just very quiet over there.
Well, that's because you don't do OpenBSD with Theodorat.
Oh, that may be the case. Yeah, that's true.
Theodorat is definitely more.
FreeBSD and PCBSD. But
Theodorat's definitely more vocal than Torvalds ever will be.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I saw him interviewed once on, I believe it was BSD Now, you know, the podcast or the video podcast, and he seemed, you know, fairly reasonable and personable, but that was just being interviewed. So
right. It's not on the BSD mailing
list. Okay. All right. So anyway, let's just find out. Normally we've got 2 weeks worth of stuff, but back in 1 week. It's like old times.
Right. So what'd you do this week, Mary?
On our last show, I mentioned I was going to look at Legacy OS, and I downloaded that ISO, and for some reason, I could not get a clean download. I thought it was the medium I was using, because I was going to throw it on a CD, and it would not go. It just was a mess. So, for me. Again, not that the OS itself is not a mess, because we talked a little bit about it. I think it was last week, and it looks very nice, but I couldn't get it to go. So that was, you know, something I tried. So we won't have a distro review this week. We'll have some other things. The other thing I did is I ordered, after hearing about it on BSD Now, I ordered, the second edition. It's not out yet, but I pre-ordered it on Amazon, the design and implementation of the FreeBSD operating system, second edition. So 1/3 of it is brand new material. It covers
That's
the ZFS.
Be pretty in depth, isn't it?
Well, I want to get a better understanding of how, I realize that Linux and FreeBSD share a lot of commonality.
No, they're very, very different kernels.
Well, I'm just talking about just the, and I should be more technically specific when I'm talking about, a Linux distro and FreeBSD. They share some commonalities, but you're right, Matt, they are different. And I want to get a better understanding of, how FreeBSD is put together. And I will tell you right now, I'm probably not going to read every page of that book, but I think there's going to be enough information in there that is going to broaden my understanding of it and, you know, just, I think, make me a better person.
All right.
So.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I start thinking about our release party, the KDE release party that I'm also going to use as a Kubuntu release party, but I'm not going to tell Matt. so we gotta get that planned, because that's coming up in another week and a half. So
when are we having it?
Well, the actual release of KDE 4.13 is on Wednesday, I think, like the 18th or something like that. Excuse me,
on a Saturday night.
It's the 16th.
But it's the question is Saturday or Friday, because Friday
17th.
Night I can't go.
Okay, well. Well, and Saturday the 19th is, I believe, in the Holy Saturday kind of Easter thing. It's
I have no idea.
I don't either, but I remember from my childhood. So
I'm not
it's
concerned with that either.
Well, good. I guess that makes three of us. So maybe we should plan for the 19th to do our release party. And we're going to post it within the next couple of days. We're going to post the location. I think we had talked about doing something outside of Detroit.
When did we talk about that?
Oh, a couple months ago. Like a month or two ago, about doing it something different. Although we could go down to Atwater again. We just have to bring our food with us. Go get pizza and go down there from there.
Bring other people too, since nobody shows up when we're there.
Yeah, well, John, friend of the show, John Miller shows up.
He did. Yeah,
and
he did
one time. Yeah.
And he likes going down there. I mean, you're in the brewery.
Right. Well, we could also go. What was that other brewery we went to that one time that had food?
Motor City Brewing Works, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really good.
Yep. So
that place is best though in the summer when it's warm.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
The door can be open. So maybe the summer release or fall release, we can do that one.
Okay. Well, we'll get it finalized, everyone, and anybody who's in the area wants to come down and party with us.
We could go to Royal Oak, I guess.
You know, we could.
Yeah, Lincoln Park has a really good one.
We could go to Michino's Cafe in Redford.
We can go to One Eyed Betty's in Ferndale. They have a whole beer.
Sandy's by the beach.
All right, we're way off.
I'm just naming bars by my house.
All right, well, anyway, so we'll figure it out, and we'll let everybody know, and those of you who want to come down and have some fun.
The Redford Grill, they have a bar.
I don't even know where that is.
They're all like at Five Island Beach Daily.
So besides taking a category or taking an inventory of all the bars within a mile of your house, what did you do last week?
What did I do last week? I'm trying to write a script for work. It's a different kind of script. It's something you would use live, more like a function, a bash function, maybe. Mm-hmm. But what I want to do with it is I want to be able to just run parts of it. And you would have to do that with GetOps. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to understand, get my head wrapped around GetOps. And I thought it was going to be easy because the first tutorial I read seemed really straightforward, seemed like, I'll be able to get a handle on this. But it was too simplistic. I couldn't do anything with that tutorial. Hmm. So I found another tutorial and read that and said, that's not quite as easy as the first one made it seem. Then I found this other tutorial called Advanced Bash Shell Scripting.
Ooh, and now
I got lost about a half a paragraph in on that one.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that.
So this is going to take some effort to get my head wrapped around this GetOps thing.
GetOps?
Yeah, GetOps.
Okay.
It's a bash built-in.
Huh.
I am completely unfamiliar with it, so.
That's not a shocker.
That's right, because, I've just gotten past the Hello World script, but anyway, so. Well, good luck with that, Matt. I'm confident, though. I know you, and I'm confident you'll figure it out one way or another.
One way or another.
That's right. So, anyway, Tony, I guess there's just one person left.
Yeah.
You.
Well, I was late to work almost every day because I would come down here and start, looking at I have a bash script that we're trying to work getting, for the bot. When the bot drops off, it restarts it.
Yeah.
And, there's always seems to be an issue with it. That the biggest problem is we're using II as an shell IRC client, and you can script it.
Yeah.
So we're trying to use that, but Freenode either isn't responding in time or isn't responding at all.
Oh.
And whenever it connects, and then we issue the command like who is, and then the bot name, and then there's nothing coming back. And so I put a wait in there, and I have it waiting 30 seconds, and it never gets a response. So then it thinks, oh, they're not in there, so restart the bot. Then every time the cron runs the script, then the bot restarts and restarts. But it doesn't happen all the time. It happens once every, 10 times the script runs.
Is it predictable?
No. I couldn't find a rhyme or reason. If I manually type it all out, it runs fine. Like, if I take each command and type it out, then it comes back exactly what I want.
Not a fatal syntax error, you know what I mean?
Right.
but just something.
I read through it. Maybe I'll have somebody else look at it too. But it's Carl and I are working on that.
There's a good way to do this, and I've started doing this. It was suggested to me by a friend of mine. It's called rubber ducky debugging.
Okay.
Okay. You get a rubber ducky. Okay.
Throw it.
And you explain the script line by line to the rubber ducky. You're laughing at me. But okay. No, because of just the object of reading it and saying it out loud and explaining it as you go will help you find where you've made the mistake.
Oh, yeah. You're like, oh, wait a minute. That's not
supposed to say exactly. That. That's not going to do what I wanted to do. You know?
Sure.
Rubber ducky debugging. I don't actually use a rubber ducky, but.
Yeah.
No, he's not admitting to it.
But I have started doing that, and it's helped a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, what about that? Wasn't there some kind of a browser-based shell?
A shell checker. You could use that. It's called Shell Checker.
That's remember right. that? We used that. We were talking about that about a month ago or so. That's another way, too, Tony. So we provided you with a couple of options, and maybe next show you can report back.
Sure. Yeah, shellchecker.net.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So that was my big thing this week. Otherwise, I mean, it's been really busy at work. And
I had so many servers blow up last night. It was nonstop.
Wow.
You know, work stuff that we're moving everybody off Windows XP going to Windows 7. You know,
why are you doing that?
Well, actually, the Windows
because a lot of corporations support, they're just ignoring it.
But yeah, I know. Well, it's because I work at a hospital, healthcare.
Yeah.
And I don't know who deemed it, but somebody deemed that if you're running Windows XP after April 8th, you are in violation of HIPAA because then there's potential.
Oh, flaws. Yeah.
Oh, it makes sense.
But if you think they've released an update on April 8th.
Who is?
You still have a month before the actual problem would start to compile. Microsoft only releases patches.
But critical
monthly.
Ones, they will release faster than that.
They release them on Tuesdays.
Patch Tuesday.
Okay. Well,
but if they're critical, they'll release them before Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought it was a monthly on Tuesday, the second Tuesday or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, anyway. So we're going to Windows 7. And we have this crew of people, there's four people that are interns, and then we have three that normally do our refresh stuff. And, they're just throwing computers in and walking away. And then I'm getting like three times the amount of tickets I normally get. So I normally get like four or five a day. I'm getting like 15 a day. And, so it's very busy right now. And then everybody's complaining to me, this looks different.
Like, of course it looks different.
And not only are we going from Windows XP to Windows 7, then we're going from Office 2007 to Office 2010, which has some changes in it also.
Oh, yeah.
And,
from 2007 to 2010?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a major jump. I was thinking
it's not a major jump.
If you were on 2003, that would make sense.
There's some changes.
I still use 2007 at work.
The biggest difference in the past changes was they added the ribbon in. Well, they added the ribbon, but then they took away the file menu and they took away, they moved most of the stuff around again on the ribbon.
That's because they hate their customers.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't understand why the world keeps using Microsoft. I really don't understand it.
For us, it's because there's so many vendors that require it. And we still have vendors that require Internet Explorer 7. But you can run IE 8 and 9 in compatibility mode to make it work.
Compatibility
mode. That's, it's.
So this
crazy.
Is, the Sunday morning Windows show.
You're right. Yeah. So we can continue on.
That's fine. I was kidding around about that. But, so all those XP desktops or machines, are they gonna be gotten rid of?
They're reimaging them.
Okay.
So we have ones that are 4 years and older that they're going to the disposal.
Mm-hmm.
And anything newer than that, they take them back and then they reimage with new Windows 7 stuff on it.
All right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy, that was a lot.
So, yeah. Sorry about that.
No. You gotta work. Okay. Well, I guess that means we're moving on to
the kernel news.
The kernel news.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
Go ahead, Matt.
All right. The mainline kernel is 3.14. The 1.4 kernel has been released on 3.31. Then the stables 3.13.9 released on 4.3. Long-term kernel 3.12.16 released on 4.2. Long-term kernel 3.10.36 released on 4.3. Long-term kernel 3.4.86 released on 4.3. Long-term kernel 3.2.56 released on 4.1. And das ist alles.
Danke.
All right. Well, I guess we're going on to the...
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
Distro news, right?
I believe that's what comes next.
That's right.
So take it away, Tony.
Yeah. On the 31st, we have GRML 2014.03, which is a Debian-based live CD with a collection of GNU Linux software designed for web or system administrators. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I
it's
didn't
like
know.
It's like a rescue CD for servers and system administrators.
Yes. Now, and we've seen that pop up. I have to fill about 10 seconds worth of space here with idle chatter. Actually, most of my stuff's idle chatter, but I'm trying to open up my little list of things to say about GRML.
Ah, that's right.
But I do have a little trivia thing. Now, what do you think? All right, Matt and Tony, what do you think, without looking it up, what do you think GRML stands for? Does it stand for?
I used to know.
General Release Management Linux, Glorified Redundant Management Linux, GNU Retrieval Mountable Linux, or the song people make when they want to express their dissatisfaction with software?
The third one.
The last one.
The last one.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I was poking around the site, just kind of getting a feel for this distro, and I thought, you know, what does it mean? But they've got an FAQ, and that's right in their FAQ. So I thought, that's going to be a great little trivia question.
Yeah.
But one thing that they do is they've got several scripts and utilities that, as they say, make life easier. And by the way, too, the default interactive shell is ZSH. Did you know that? In GRML?
No,
they've got
not.
They've got GRML-X, which is a wrapper for configuring and using the X Windows system. And this release, apparently in the last release that they had, GRML to USB, there was a bug or an issue in that release that would not allow you to or would not allow the system to detect a boot flag if it was on the second partition.
Really?
Yeah, the last September's release. So this release apparently has fixed that, or at least it's a it was listed as a known issue. May still be open. No, thank you. I'm not even going to eat a strawberry. It has to be dipped in chocolate. Anyway, but all right, we're going to keep moving right along here. So thanks, Tony. What's your next one?
The next one is Triskel. Triskel GNU Linux 6.0.1. And this is their upgraded release. It's a Ubuntu-based that is strictly free software.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I know a lot of people complain about that kind of thing, but, you know, if it's for you.
I do. I hate that free software. I always want to pay for my software. It must be more valuable.
Not money, not like free. Free beer. Yeah,
free as in freedom.
That's right. And so it's.
That's a podcast.
That's right.
Free as in freedom?
Yeah.
Yep.
Good.
With what's her name and what's his name.
That's right. Yeah, I knew that exactly. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me, Matt.
On that whatchamacallit day? What day?
Yeah, that's it.
That's
you
right.
Got it, Mary.
It's on that other website.
Yeah, that other website.
That's it.
Oh, my God. You can tell we've... All right, well, A little punchy this morning, aren't we?
A little bit.
What's in this coffee, Tony?
No. I think it's the pineapple you guys are eating.
I think it's fermented.
It's good, though. I'm going to have some more.
Oh, it is.
All right.
I'm stuffed.
I love pineapple. I hated it as a child, though. I don't know why. Mm. Ooh.
You were an odd child.
I think so, because I like ketchup, but I hated tomatoes. Bizarre. Anyway, we're moving on to the next.
Did you ever have Canadian ketchup?
No.
It tastes very different than American ketchup.
Really?
Really?
Yes. Different spices. They don't have 57 flavors.
And it's got a lot more sugar in it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm going over to Windsor. I'm going to go buy ketchup. And then when I come back through customs. I just went over to buy ketchup for our podcast. We're going to test it.
Because I used to know this lady. My wife worked with her.
Uh-huh.
And she was Canadian. She used to commute every day back and forth. And I used to have her bring me ketchup all the time. I love that Canadian ketchup.
Really? All right. I'm going to do some checking into it. Okay. What's next, Tony?
The next one we have is not that page.
Not that page Linux.
It's Clonezilla.
MTP. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Clonezilla 2.2.2.32. It's Debian-based live CD for disk cloning and disk management. And I use it all the time. But I use it within the Parted Magic disk, which is really cool.
Oh, it's okay.
It's a very good CD.
I've used Parted Magic. I just didn't realize Clonezilla was embedded in there.
I didn't either. Because Clonezilla has its own disk.
Or do you think Clonezilla has got Parted Magic in it?
No, it's the other way. Magic.
I'm pretty sure Clonezilla's got Parted Magic in it.
Are you thinking of G-Parted?
No.
Parted Magic is a disk.
He might
have G-Parted and Clonezilla and a full GUI desktop.
You're right. I told you.
I was thinking of G-Parted.
Whenever he comes back, no, really fast, just know that he's not sure, but he's trying to hide it. All right.
Anyway, it's a pretty good setup. I use it a lot.
So. Some other things that they've got in this release too is, they have added, what's called an unattended option, for their make boot, script.
Mm.
And they also, up to this point, SysLinux and IsoLinux, there were two separate directories, in Clonezilla Live. They've been unified as a single directory called SysLinux. So apparently, some user had made that suggestion and they went ahead and put that in place. And then also, they've added an option, rsyncable, which it's a good word.
Rsyncable?
The option, dash rsyncable is added for gzips and, pigzs when saving an image. So apparently if you're saving it and there's something going on inside it, it's going to sync it.
That's called pigs.
Pigs. Pigz. Pigz. Okay. Well, there you go. Until I didn't know that. Okay, thanks.
P-I-G-Z?
Yeah.
All right. You know, that unattended run sounds really cool. Because you know what you'd use it for?
Mm-hmm.
It's, say you're in an office area, and you have remote sites, and mm-hmm. you need to reimage a machine. You have Clonezilla with this unattended run set up as a network boot. You tell the person to reboot and hit a button, like F12, and choose a network boot. It'll go through and reimage their machine, boot back up, and they're ready to go.
Oh, that is
nice. And it takes no user interface or user interaction, mm-hmm. beyond
that initial
networking. Yeah, booting it. So that would be really cool. Because I know there's a lot of places that, like the school my wife used to work at, they did something like that. And there's, I want to say it was like Ghostery or something like that was a product that they used that would do the same thing. When they're having problems and like the OS is screwed up, instead of driving out to the school, because they were remote, instead of driving out to the school and grabbing the computer and re-imaging it,
mm-hmm.
they just told her to reboot into the network boot, and then it would re-image, and then she'd be ready to go. Because all of her stuff is saved off into the network drives and stuff.
I know Ghostery is a little browser plug-in that stops...
Okay. Maybe it's some other product.
I mean, maybe it is Ghostery, but
I think it was based on Ghost.
Okay. You know,
but
Norton Ghost or something?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the last thing about Clonezilla, too, is that they've added a package. It's lib6, ID6. It was added to the AMD 64 version so that some 32-bit programs could be run. So I guess they want to give greater flexibility kind of across, between those two architectures.
All right. Cool. Next one up we have is RoboLinux 7.4.2. I'm like,
oh my god,
keeling over there. What's going on?
You never know what's going on over here. I tell you, those of you who are not watching or don't see the video, Matt sits off to my left.
Way off.
Yeah, we're way off. All right. So yeah, Robo. What's going on with Robo, Tony?
Well, it's a Debian-based CD. I don't know. It's,
yes, it's
Robo,
is.
Man.
It's Robo. Yeah. Well, you remember I reviewed this a few weeks ago. You remember that?
No.
Oh, that's right.
This is the distro. It's really kind of unique because in their menu system, you could just click in, and they've got a script that will automatically go out to their servers and get the driver. Because remember my wireless, I've got that. I got to tell you too. You know, there's two USB ports on the side near the power thing.
Yeah.
Whenever I throw something in the top one, the computer just dies. It's like shorts it out.
Oh no.
Yeah. I was using it at our community association meeting on Thursday. We had a slideshow. So I'm getting ready to plug it in. The whole system just goes poof. And we ended up not using it anyway, but it was funny.
Let me see it. So sometimes what happens is when you plug something in, or when it does that,
yeah,
then the leads are actually touching inside the USB port. So all you have to do is check those.
Oh, there's and four kind of leads push them apart inside.
There's
bit.
Four of them. Yeah, make
do
sure they're lined up right.
Do you have to pop the lid
right.
to do that?
No, you just stick like a paper needle. Clip inside.
Yeah, paper clip.
Okay. I'll do that when the computer's off and unplugged.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Take the battery out too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good point. But anyway, getting back to Robo Linux. So you click on this thing and they've got, the wrappers and drivers and all that for the Broadcom chip that will come down and download it and, get you up and running.
I hate those Broadcom chips.
I do too. Oh, I hate them. I'm sorry.
I know how to fix that. You can buy an Intel one and stick it in.
Sometimes they're built onto the motherboard.
I know, but this one is not.
Integrated.
I know this one specifically.
It's not?
No, you can get a separate Wi-Fi chip for that.
Right. And it's got its own door in the back too, than usual.
What do I need?
It has to be a mini...
Its own back door? Is that what you said?
No, door on the back
of the laptop. That you take it off and exposes the...
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So if I go into Micro Center and I say I need a
you'd have to probably order.
Yeah, Micro Center probably won't have it. No, you can get it on eBay or Amazon.
Well, aftermarket.
Buy.com. I'm gonna get the real one.
I bet Kerkrunk or whatever that place Rutunkel or Buy.com.
Oh, Rakuten.
They changed their name.
Buy.com.
Did they really?
I was
so
stupid.
3 years ago.
That long ago?
It was a long time ago.
It was
really?
Yeah.
Yes.
No way. It's not been that long since I've been to buy.com.
Well, you can still
since
go.
Since we started the show, I remember Mary talking about it and going over there, and they had the logo up there.
Now watch. I typed in buy.com, and it's now Rakuten.com.
Oh.
Formerly. I have no idea.
It still says buy.com there.
True, but I think it is really stupid of these guys to take. Well, I don't even know.
Why would you change your name from buy.com, which is easy, catchy,
thank you,
to Rakuten?
What the heck is a Rakuten?
What the heck is a Rakuten?
I have no idea.
It was probably some foreign company bought buy.com and wanted their name on it. But they said, but you can still type in buy.com and get to it.
Yeah, and I still do. I don't save that Rakuten.
Never buying anything from buy.com. Well, I have obviously in 3 years, but
I do. You get depending
I use
on the,
Amazon a lot.
Well, either way, I bet you can find that that card on there. Basically, you just put in, mm-hmm.
Oh, here
I can give you the exact
here on buy.com. You can get toilet tree products.
You can on Amazon too.
Toilet tree. T-O-I-L-E-T-R-E-E. Oh, my God.
That's crazy. English is not that guy's first language.
No, it's a brand name.
Toilet space tree.
It's a brand name.
It's not a brand name, and it's no space either.
There's the logo.
Toilet tree.
Yeah, but it's no space.
Oh, you're right. There's no space.
Yeah. Okay, now people are...
I thought it was funny. Now
we're
it's not
showing
funny.
This on
it's
my...
stupid.
Yeah, on my open source software computer. That's why it's related to the show, but we're going to keep going. What were we talking about? We haven't gotten past Robo Linux. So anyway, but the thing about this release is I think they've broadened that virtual machine because they're making great hay about the Windows XP expiration on April, was it 8th? And so they've now released that virtualization solution so that you can run XP, as they say, virus-free, which really isn't the case, technically speaking, because it's running in a virtual machine, so it is isolated from your main machine, but it could still get viruses, but they just won't last because,
as soon as you reboot.
You reboot, it's gone.
So. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, so that's what's going on with Robo. So, all right. What's next?
The last one on the list, there is one more. And it's pfSense 2.1.1 that was released this morning on 4.5. And it's a free network firewall distribution based on FreeBSD.
Yeah.
It is based on FreeBSD. Mm-hmm. However, a little bit of trivia for you.
What is FreeBSD built on? Based on?
No. It does
Berkeley
not
software
use
software distribution Unix.
It does not use FreeBSD's PF.
No.
No.
Is it because they use a customized kernel?
They paid to have OpenBSD's PF ported to FreeBSD.
Oh.
For security.
Because it was that much better. No, traffic. It can just pump through the traffic.
Oh, does it? Okay. Well, and that's very important because this is a firewall distro, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a couple of the updates and changes they made in this release is that they now use HTTPS for any pfSense.org URLs, and then also they're using HTTPS or secure sockets, I probably should say. Which way would be better? Which way sounds like I know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. At work, we just say HTTPS.
Okay. they're also sending that through for updates too. It goes through HTTPS. So
we make fun of the people that say secure sockets.
Oh, okay. Then I'm not saying it. And then finally, apparently there was some issue with uppercase, lowercase MAC addresses. So what they've done now is they basically convert them all now to lowercase to avoid duplicates, as they were saying. So.
All right.
What?
I know. I kind of thought about that.
You
type
in a MAC address.
Uppercase A is different than lowercase A.
Exactly.
Right, but in a MAC address, it doesn't matter.
On a MAC address, yeah, it doesn't matter.
You can type either an uppercase or a lowercase because it's a number, actually. It's not a letter.
Okay. Well, then, as far as it being interpreted before, I guess there was some duplicate issues with perceived duplication.
Right, because it would make another entry because it would see it as a different number.
Yeah, so what they've done now is they automatically just convert it to lowercase to get rid of that whole issue. So anyway,
I think Linux does that if you type, if you're putting it in, mm-hmm. if you're editing the EFC, the IFCFG file by hand and stuff, I think if you type uppercase, when you save it, it saves it as lower.
Oh, does it?
Or vice versa. It might save it as upper.
Okay.
I don't know. I would think that it would save it however you typed it, and then when it's interpreted by the program, then it would make the conversion.
I really don't think it's saved. I think it's always saved as one format or the other. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Okay. Are you talking about in the network config?
Yeah, the IFCFG files.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway.
The last thing I was going to say about pfSense is that the way they organize all the changes and things to their new releases is just excellent. I mean, they've got it sectioned off, but they really do a nice job in making it easy to find the next section. They make it effective use of color.
Yeah. Well, pfSense has always been had a great front end.
Yep. It's just, it's not too fluffy, but it's got enough, contrast to it that you can really see what's what.
And you can really do the nitty gritty with it too. It's mm-hmm. not like your average GUI front end on that kind of product where it's crippled,
and
you have to really do the stuff at the command line. You can really do everything you need to do through the GUI front end on pfSense. I like it a lot.
That's nice. I know we got an email asking us about the different firewalls that we use. Because I've talked about, I run IPFire here. So, and we'll talk more about it in the listener feedback. But he was asking about why I chose IPFire, and maybe we could talk about the different firewall distros sometime. So, yeah. Anyway, we're going on to the top five of the week.
All right, Tony.
You know what? I already did that. So, number five.
What?
In number five, I have Elementary with 1414.
And trending up.
Number four is Arch with 1477.
Nope. 1447 I have.
Oh, you're right. 1447. I don't know what I said.
Well, anyway, you said 77. You're trying to give him a boost.
And trending up.
Number three is Debian with 1691.
And trending up.
And number two is Ubuntu with 2751.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3542.
And trending up.
You didn't hear the way I did it last week, did you?
No.
I did it a little differently. But I'll tell you what, I predict within the next 2 weeks, Ubuntu is going to almost catch up with Mint because they're releasing their long-term support version. And it's going to...
No, it never happens. Not even if I have to click that freaking Linux Mint page every second for
all right.
a week.
You're not going to let it happen?
That's right.
All right.
All right. Well, so I don't know what button to hit on our soundboard because I don't know what we're doing next. Is it news?
No, we're going to do a little distro talk.
Some more distro?
Yeah, distro. Well, I wouldn't exactly call it a review, but...
All right.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
And as I just said, I wouldn't exactly call it a review, but what I'm going to talk a little bit about is Turnkey Linux. Now, I think everybody's kind of familiar about Turnkey Linux. It's a project that has a whole bunch of ready-to-load appliances.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Tell us more, Mary.
Okay. So this past week, what I did is, you know, I've got an Amazon Web Services account. And
really? Tell us more, Mary. That's it. I'm done. I'll stop.
Okay. Good. That's good. I'm sure our listeners are appreciative too. But anyway, but I got an S3 account, so I've got some recordings and some stuff that I don't want to lose, and I've loaded them up there. And do you know if you just store stuff up there and you don't have a lot of input output going on, transmission receive, it's very cheap to store stuff on Amazon.
Well, are you using Amazon storage or are you using
Glacier? S3. I'm using S3. I'm not using, they've got like a long-term storage thing called Glacier, which is for, maybe archival type purposes.
Right. No. But then they have the Amazon storage. Like, you can't install a web server on it. Like,
no.
It's not AWS.
It's part of the AWS suite of, products.
Right. But it's just for storage. Just for you to
S3.
Put stuff up there.
Yeah, S3. Okay. Yep. Simple, what is it? Simple something?
Simple storage. Yeah.
Simple storage solution?
Yeah, something like that.
Silly simple storage. Anyway, so I've got some recordings and stuff up there that I have, that I don't need access to, and it's extremely cheap to store them. But I also have, an EC2. Account, which is, you know, the Elastic Compute Cloud. And I've got a Turnkey Linux account. So what I did this past week is I went and I upgraded to their bronze plan, the Turnkey Linux's bronze plan, which is, I think, $20 a month. So that allows me to do, you know, open up little, you know, the small, I think they're small instances. And so I took a Turnkey Linux appliance called Lime Survey and I spun that up and I have customized, survey. I've created a survey and I've customized it. I'm going to use it at work for some of my customers when we go to pilot. So I've dropped our logo in there. I've done some other stuff with it. And since I last looked at Lime Survey, Turnkey Linux, they've added probably at least a dozen or so.
They just added a new appliance. I forget what it made a big splash what they added. Oh, what did they add? I can't.
Yeah, I tell you.
Oh, Something comes to Turnkey. Oh, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, and they've got, I mean, they have got so many appliances. What's really nice about it, I mean, it's, you know, it runs on a Debian Linux instance, but for people who maybe, now obviously everybody who listens to our show knows about Linux, but if you don't know, you don't even have to know how to run Linux in order to make use of it. You just got to...
Oh, I know, a domain controller.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes. I thought about spinning that up and getting a better understanding of how domain controllers work. Our product now uses Active Directory to authenticate users. And I wanted to get a better understanding myself. So I thought, I'll just spin that up and, you know, run a few tutorials. But anyway, the other nice thing about Turnkey Linux in this instance is that I needed to put these logos, because I wanted to replace the stock logo with a custom logo, is that there are two ways you can access your instance. You can access it via a little console button, so that it opens a console in the browser, and you know, you can get root privileges and go in there and move, upload, download, that type of thing. And then they also have a link to Webmin. So Webmin is a part of that, maintenance, and administering the system. So if you don't need to go in via console and do work there, you can maintain your Turnkey Linux instance via Webmin. So I really, we're having a ton of fun with it. I also had installed Lime Survey myself on one of my one-on-one accounts and was working with it then. But for some reason, I don't know if it's just psychological, but using it in Amazon was just so much more smooth. I'm not sure why. It's just maybe they, you know, just because. Well, I'll tell you why it is. It's because Turnkey Linux has taken Lime Survey and has already set it up. I had to go in and do some setup, a little bit of setup and stuff myself. Yeah. When I put it on one-on-one, but it's all done for you. It's very nice.
Yeah, it's probably already optimized to run with a specific database and stuff. So that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, my, I don't know the version of MySQL, but you know, again, it's all set up. So
yeah.
Yeah, so that was one other thing I've been playing around with this week. So I'll have an update once we do actually use this, use those surveys. I'll probably have an update because, we're gonna use them for our pilot participants to respond as far as how their experience is going. And Lime Survey allows you to create a token table. So back in the MySQL portion of it, you can generate unique tokens. So, and if you've got the user's email address, there are some canned emails that will go out with the token to each person so they can, they'll get the token. And then if you've closed the survey so that you have to have a token in order to complete it, they'll get the email, they get a link, they click on it, they put the token in there, bingo, they're in the survey. They can run through the questions. And then, Lime Survey also includes not exactly an assessment, capability, but you basically can run statistics and they've got graphics capabilities as far as the data that you've collected and presenting it. So it's really pretty slick. And I've, you know, as far as Lime Survey goes, I've contributed a couple times to that project because they do such nice work.
Yeah.
And I really, if you've ever got a need to survey a group of people, I highly recommend Lime Survey as a way to do it. And using Turnkey Linux, I mean, you can also download the Turnkey Linux appliance to your local hard drive or to, you know, some other instance that you might have somewhere else.
Yeah, that's nice.
You know, so that was my distro review this week, Turnkey Linux and Lime Survey.
Nice. You know, you were talking about the Amazon storage.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know Google has Google Drive, and you can store stuff on there.
Yeah.
They have upped their free limit to 15 gigs.
Oh, they have?
And they changed their prices. You can get 100 gigs for $2 a month. You can get a terabyte for $10 a month.
Oh, my God.
A terabyte of storage. Yeah, that's cheap.
Wow.
And then you can even get 10 terabyte for $100 a month.
10 terabytes?
10 terabytes, yeah. I mean, that's more than what I have on my computers here. Like, if I
all
combine all
together?
My computers, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny, Tony, because I looked at my Dropbox account and suddenly I've got 150 gigs for, you know, I pay like $9.99 a month.
Oh, yeah.
And it went from, I think when I first got it years ago, it was like 50. Then it went up to 100. Now it's up to 150.
Oh, so, that's... Yeah.
It's probably
so
doing that.
So they didn't
that.
Change the price that you're paying, but
they gave me more
they
storage.
Gave you more storage.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So the only problem is I'll have to be careful because, like on my workstation at home, I only have so much. I mean, Dropbox may increase the space, but I'm going to have to throw in another drive or something like that locally to, and maybe do logical volume, some kind of logical volume.
Oh, right.
You know, management or something across
to grow
multiple
the file
hard drives.
Systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just one little thing to be careful of.
But, yeah.
Oh, speaking of, Speaking of cloud services, did you see that Ubuntu One is going to be shutting down?
I did not.
Yes.
Wow.
It was posted on one of Canonical's blogs this week that they are going to be shutting it down, and I guess just due to lack of use. Sometimes it's when you've got so many different providers out there, it's very hard to get traction.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't see that. I saw that as more of a add-on for Ubuntu and not some core offering. Where you look at somebody like Dropbox or Walla or some of those other companies where that's their primary core business,
right.
They're going to be probably invest a lot more in it. And so Ubuntu said that you will have the opportunity to download your stuff or do whatever until July 31st, I think it is, and then it'll be deleted. So it's like, better hurry.
Nice, yeah.
That'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, really. I used it a little bit when it first came out, when they were including it, in Ubuntu.
Uh-huh.
And I was using it mainly to sync my Tomboy notes.
Yeah.
Which was convenient. You could sync them back and forth, and,
yep.
And it was nice. But once I started using OwnCloud and got that working, in the last year, that I haven't used anything since. Anything other than OwnCloud. I really like OwnCloud.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying that, and I keep seeing references to it, and I keep thinking, oh, I've got this old little Dell machine that I think it only has 2 gigs of RAM, but that, it's probably enough.
Yeah, you can definitely run on that. You can even run a virtual machine out in the internet, an Amazon service running OwnCloud, and then you'd have full.
Oh.
So you're not relying on your internet here at home. When you're away, you're not relying on your upload speed here for your connection.
Yeah.
And then if you do this Google Drive thing for, 100 gigs, you can map in Google Drive, possibly. I would think you'd be able to run a script to map Google Drive to the OwnCloud storage. And then
probably,
you have 100 gigs backed up and for $2 a month.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Google Drive for $100 gigs for $2 a month?
Yeah. Yeah. They just changed it a couple of weeks ago. They upped their free limits to 15 gigs.
Ubuntu One closing down. I don't know if you saw that.
All right.
So for those
that's
of you who
celebration.
Matt has stepped away for those of you. He wasn't sitting here the whole time not paying attention.
Not.
But anyway. So they are, as we just said, they're shutting down, and if you haven't downloaded or otherwise made accommodation for your content on their system, it's going to be deleted.
Really? They're hardcore closing it down, huh?
Well,
the date again?
I thought it was the end of July, but it's several months out in the future. So they announced it so it's about 6 months you've got to get your stuff off.
Boy, they got a great business model, don't they?
Well, as we were just saying before you came back, is that that's not their core business. I think it was sort of an add-on for them.
Yeah, their core business is, let me think about that. Yeah, okay.
Cloud services? That is not Ubuntu's core business, is it?
They don't have a core business.
Yeah, he's saying.
Oh, that's what he's saying.
He didn't say anything, and that's what he's saying.
Sorry, I'm a little slow this morning. I better drink some coffee. All right, I got you, Matt. Thanks.
Core business.
Yeah. Well, you missed my whole turnkey Linux review, too.
I'm sorry. I'm interested in that. Especially that domain controller. I was going to try that out myself.
Well, if you do, let me know how that goes. And if, if it'd be worthwhile for me to kind of poke around and see if I could. I mean, because if you're putting it out in the cloud, I don't see how you could really use it. You'd have to download that instance, install it locally, and then poke around with it. That would seem to be more effective due to the nature of its
function.
Right,
of a domain controller.
Yeah.
Because you authenticate other devices against the domain controller.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So I wonder what if... Because from what I understand of Samba 4, I've never used Samba 4. I used to use Samba 3.5 and a lot, but I've never used Samba 4. And my understanding with Samba 4 was the domain controller functionality that they have in it now worked pretty well. But there was a trade-off in that if you wanted to run a file server, you had to run 3.5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, wouldn't you just run them on separate servers? Domain controller on one, file server on a separate?
Right, but you used to be able to, when it was an NT-style domain controller.
Oh, yeah.
You could do it all on one server, which is, I did that for several customers, was ran it all on one computer.
I used Samba for a while. I had a nice old Samba share and had stuff on it, and it was great. And then I kind of got away from it, I think, after cloud services.
We used it at work. We used a Samba share at work because, like the office girls, they use Windows, and our ESG team all uses Macs. And
what's ESG?
Enterprise Support Group.
Okay.
And our regular support techs have these Dells with SSDs in them and really nice little like netbooks. Mm-hmm. And then us other schlubs just all get big Dells.
Big like Dell, like the one we're looking at now? Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's got the full keyboard. Yeah. I mean, the full number pad and everything. Key, yeah.
So. Yeah, nice.
Okay.
All right, I guess we're going on to...
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The news this week.
The news.
Well, I covered my news at the beginning.
Yes, you did. So, Tony, do you got any news?
I actually was able to find a lot of stuff this week.
All right, Tony!
All right.
So in the show notes, I already touched on two of them. Google slashes the Google Drive prices. So it goes, 15 gigs free, 100 gigs is $2 a month, a terabyte is $10 a month, and 10 terabyte is $100 a month.
How much is a terabyte?
$10 a month.
I might get a terabyte, move all my shit up there.
Yeah. Give it all to Google. They can do anything they want with it.
Who cares? If you got nothing to hide.
That's right.
Mary looked at me because Mary knows that's not me.
Exactly. Put your cop videos up there.
Yeah, there you go.
My goodness.
Anyway, I thought that was really cool. There's a link about that. And then, as I was just talking about, you can take Google Drive and mount it as a fuse mount on your system.
Oh, really?
On a Linux command line. So, my plan would be, you could get a VPS.
It's gonna be my home directory.
Yeah, you could do a home directory
for
on your
Chromebook.
For everything, man.
Or you have to have
an internet connection.
When in today's modern society do you not have an internet connection?
When you boot it up today. And then you would have no home drive.
I could boot into root, because root's home directory is not on home. And then I can get the internet in 5 seconds and then switch back over to my regular user. Problem solved.
I'm sorry, but the sync method that is employed by Dropbox, I'm not advocating Dropbox per se.
It would be a sync method.
It's I have everything I need locally.
No, my plan. No.
And it syncs back up there. That's what I like.
No, my idea is you get a $5 VPS.
Uh-huh.
You get
$5?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you can get them.
DigitalOcean, I have one running right now. And I signed up for a $5 plan. I used it so little in March, they charged me $2.50 for it.
Really?
Yeah. So you get a $5 plan. You get your 100 gigs for $2 a month. So you're spending $7 a month. You install OwnCloud on there. Then you have 100 gig storage for OwnCloud that's backed up on Google Drive. And it syncs to your local computer.
Yeah. Wow.
So
now that's a freaking plan. I'm going to look into that one.
That's open source. And
I'm going to look into that one.
Yeah. Yeah, or if you happen to work at an ISP, then you could run OwnCloud on your own
server. Yeah, that's it. I'm kicking MDLug off my free colo.
Wait.
But get an employee discount, don't you?
I do.
Okay.
I may do that with my VPS. Install OwnCloud on it.
Now, which VPS are you using?
DigitalOcean.
I'll have to look that up.
They have different servers. That's something else. I'll tell you in a second. They have different servers. You can run one, I think it's in New York, one's in San Francisco, and one's in Europe somewhere. I don't know if it's England or I didn't pay attention. But I chose the San Francisco one. Because my thought is, if I'm on this side of the world, I want my VPS, or, on opposite ends of the U.S.
Okay.
But anyway.
In an earthquake-prone area. I think that's a great choice.
you beat me to it by about 30 seconds. I was going to let him finish talking before I...
I didn't think about that. At least it's not in a basement that gets flooded.
Yeah, Pier 1. Is it in Pier 1? Is that where the other choice is?
I don't know. It could be. But anyway, I do tunneling, SSH tunneling on my laptop. Mm-hmm. So I didn't start the tunnel yet, and I was in my Gmail or in my Google Plus on my laptop. And then I then thought about it. So I will start tunneling, and I tunneled out to my VPS in San Francisco. I tried to get to Google and it blocked me. It says somebody's trying to hack your account. 5 minutes ago, you were in Detroit. And then now you're in San Francisco.
It's a wormhole.
Right.
No, that's why I use, do you use Google's two-step authentication?
I have not, but I've been thinking about it.
But if you use Google's two-step authentication, they'll let you do it, but they'll send the two-factor to wherever. And as long as you use the two-factor, it'll let you in.
Yeah. That's good. Is it like an app on your phone, how you do that?
No. Or? You give it your phone number and it calls you.
Yeah, well, the issue with that is my phone doesn't get service in my office. So I'd never be able to log in to my...
I thought you had a Wi-Fi phone that you used when you were in your office.
Oh, yeah. I could have it go over... But that's still a Gmail account that it connects to.
Oops, sorry.
Your phone, though.
Yeah, my phone uses Google Voice. Would it still work?
I think so, because my phone uses Google Voice all the time. With Sprint, you can tie your whole phone to your Google Voice, and that's the way it is. Google Voice is my voicemail on my phone and everything.
Okay. Anyway, so that's what my own cloud long-term plan may be to move to that.
I took that.
Really cool.
Did you really?
Yeah. I took that when I was in Windsor a couple years ago.
I was going to make a joke about taking it from South Detroit, but...
Anyway, the next thing I found, I've heard a lot of people talking about Markdown editors. Markdown. And Markdown is...
Price reduction?
No. It's a way to create documentation. I just lost Wi-Fi on my laptop. Anyway, I'm sure it'll pick up in a second. The Markdown
is a way... So you can't talk when you lose Wi-Fi on his laptop, no. Streaming from
it's
your
a way
laptop
for creating documentation. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of help files are created in Markdown. Markdown was originally created in 2002, and now there's all sorts of editors. It's cross-platform stuff, and I remember listening to Linux Outlaws, and they said they use Markdown editor for their show notes.
Oh, okay.
And it's simple commands, kind of like HTML, but it's simpler than that.
SGML?
You can put in
like wiki.
I guess. I don't know. I didn't get to look enough about how all the commands and all the formatting
is. Because Wiki is a real simple command set.
Right, to link between pages and stuff. And,
yeah,
right.
and to get the...
It's similar. It's similar to that. I don't know if the syntax is the same. I doubt if it's the same. I think it's similar to what WordPress also uses. If you're in the HTML side, you can use HTML or you can use their short codes. So I think it's something similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's, the link I have is, has, I think, 7 different Markdown editors. So that looks pretty cool. The next one I have is 80 plus lectures and lecture notes on Linux. So this place has links to 8 different sites that has just all sorts of lectures and notes and stuff. And there's a lot on system admin stuff and shell scripting and and then it has other things just like the history of Linux and the history of Unix and the file system of the Unix file system, and so it's a lot of interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Unix file system.
Yeah, 20 years old. At least.
Do you know what distribution uses UFS by default?
BSD?
Which one?
Open. You know why I said OpenBSD?
Why?
Because that's the one you know most about.
Oh, Tony, that was clever.
Anyway, so that's interesting stuff.
There are a lot of free courses out there that are taught by universities and
There's EdX.
EdX. Yep.
EdX. There's Coursera.
Coursera
is actually, has different universities, but they're actual full university classes.
Well, that's what I like about EdX. It is too. And the one I'm taking right now is Harvard's, Intro to Computer Science.
CS50.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Which if I complete by December 31st, I get a certificate. And if I wanted to pay, I think $200 or $250, I could get a certified certificate, which means they certify that I am Matthew Enders and I earned this certificate.
Yeah, oh, wow. So if you can put it on your resume.
I can put this one on my resume anyway.
Right, but I'm just saying if they were to check, I mean, with a certified one, then it adds credibility to it.
Yes, it does. Yes.
You know, people should be checking these days.
Right, yeah. I have one class that just started this week through Coursera. It's a Stanford professor, and it's on cryptology.
Oh.
So.
I started one from Cal Poly, VBA for Excel. for work.
I know.
I did that for the joke value. I wasn't going to say anything today. I can't say that, but you know, I'm in the Windows world during the day. Yeah. I can't help it.
You know what they call this whole thing?
MOOCs.
Yeah, MOOC.
Oh, MOOCs. MOOCs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, MOOC. Massive online.
Cause I was listening to this NPR thing where this university president was decrying these MOOCs, going, they're destroying the educational system with these MOOCs.
I can't get a degree.
Exactly. Well, you can, though. Some of them. Because a lot of EdX stuff, you can actually pay for the
credits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then if they're getting their credits, then what is it?
Because I'm a college dropout, so that might help me.
I'm
a college never ran.
Isn't it kind of amazing? I think it just goes to show you that in a lot of ways, a college education is overrated.
Well, Mary. Wait a minute. I don't want to.
Burst my bubble?
No. I don't want to divulge your possible age.
Oh.
But in your and my generation, it was way easier to get a start without a college education.
Yes, you're right. Because I was in the military. I went through a whole bunch of schools there. I went through classroom instructor school, so I knew how to present in front of people. So I learned a lot. And
it was way easier when we were starting our work lives to...
Yeah, and I'm older than you, Matt.
I wasn't going to say that, Mary.
I know, that's okay. It's all right.
to get a foot in the door and then... Be able to prove yourself, you know, without that college degree, which you just can't do anymore.
Well, speaking of college degrees, and maybe they don't worth or aren't worth much, I just applied to get my master's.
I'm going to start
EMU in the fall.
Good for you, master's in computers.
Did they accept you in the master's program?
I haven't. It's just been like 2 weeks that they've acknowledged I've gotten my
application.
I've sent my transcripts and my I have to have two reference letters, so one was sent out from my boss.
Oh, Matt, let's just get our pens out. We can help.
Okay, I'll send you the info if you want to.
Oh, sure.
But it's going to be master's in information assurance.
I can write it as the owner of Charter School IT Techs. Would you like it as that, or would you like it as Matt Enders, your friend?
Your friend and fellow podcaster.
Yeah. Friend is fine. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I have two business ones
what
right now going.
What is information assurance, first of all?
It's the assurance of information.
Yeah. Johnny, you did some darn funny.
The master's program, it's an overall. Yeah, it's a security. Okay. But they break it off into sections where information assurance is the overall, like, homeland security, like, securing.
Integrity IT of information
in
kind of stuff? Okay.
When I looked at the catalog, they hadn't split off.
Are we
but when
still
I
reduced?
Talked to them, they said they're probably going to meld it into one. They're not going to have the split anymore.
Okay.
But I'm looking at the IA in network security. So it would be.
Do you know enough like Cisco and Juniper stuff to do network
stuff? Yeah. Yeah, I'm this close from, I took all the classes for the Cisco CCNA. I just didn't take the class or the test. So I would be in a CCNA, but I didn't take the test. okay. Anyway, I mean, I'd have to restudy
stuff. I mean, I know enough to get by as an admin type yeah. guy, but when it comes to moving packets, that's not my gig.
I think
one of my good buddies at work is a net admin at work, and you know, we go out every Sunday night and bullshit, and
yeah.
he says, I don't get how you can sit there and write scripts and do this all day. And I said, well, I don't get how you can just look at packets go by all day. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you guys talk about in the data center.
No, that's what we talk about on Sunday when we're getting drunk.
Oh. All right. I think look, we're on right the there. News.
We're talking about the DigitalOcean VPS.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. It's a commercial or an ad on Mary's yeah. laptop.
Just and actually, it might be that because she searched for it.
No, it's not. It's and actually, Tony, that's a perfect segue for us to veer back on course. I think when we last knew, we were in the news section. But I wanted to mention there's a new fledgling Linux desktop environment. It's called Budgie. And it's a minimalist desktop. It kind of brings a Chrome OS style experience to your Linux distro. So they just hit version 2, and
Budgie.
Yeah, and who is the head of this project?
Is it Ikey?
Ikey Doherty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear about this already?
Well, so that means it'll be abandoned in about 18 months.
I heard about it about six months ago.
Okay. But. Yeah, so I guess it's progressed far enough now that it's getting wider publicity.
That's cool.
But it's GNOME friendly, and they indicate, and I'm not familiar with this now. Mutter, M-U-T-T-E-R, is that
Mutter.
Having to do with mutt, or is that something separate?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm familiar with the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia, but
it's a Mutter based distro.
Yeah,
their desktop environment
sits on the GNOME stack. So they say. Huh. But it's not a fork of GNOME, like Cinnamon. It is, I guess, a separate, it's an alternative, but it's able
Cinnamon's
to work with.
Cinnamon's not a fork of GNOME. They replaced the GNOME shell with Cinnamon, the Cinnamon shell, and it's GNOME underneath. So if that's what they said there, they're wrong.
Yeah, well, they said it's not a quote-unquote fork of GNOME, like Cinnamon, or
they're
an entire...
Wrong. Cinnamon is not a fork of GNOME.
But they've got fork in quote marks, so
they're exactly the same as Cinnamon.
Right, but I think
what they should be saying.
Well, I think
who
what they're saying
Cinnamon?
Here.
Huh? Who started Cinnamon?
Okay.
Who started Cinnamon?
I've lost Men control guys? Of my news story.
Yeah. Wasn't?
Yeah, yeah.
Am I Cinnamon. Wrong? But wasn't Ikey on the
no,
Cinnamon
he,
team?
I don't think he was ever on the Cinnamon.
Oh no. Okay.
So anyway, but they got a panel. There's a panel.
Because he was soulless. OS.
Oh, soulless. That's right. Mary, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Mary.
Just in the conversation go back and forth there. My head, I feel like a bobblehead. But anyway, there are three components to it. They've got a panel, there's also a window manager, and then, they've got what's called a session script. So that, contains all the necessary, stuff to launch, the required desktop elements. So anyway,
I've been looking at something to maybe go more minimalist. I was thinking about going back to LXDE from KDE.
Oh, I don't think you should leave. Well, I think you should look at Clyde, although I don't know what happened to it. Clyde, Razer QT? What about Razer QT? You can still use, Dolphin. Okay, well, you know, you gotta follow yourself and.
I wanna go more minimalist.
Alright.
It's too clunky. It's too heavy.
Alright. The other news item I have is that ButterFS, they, have put together, well, in the Linux kernel 3.15 that's coming out. I don't think that's out yet, is it?
No, were you paying attention about a half hour ago?
3.13.
3.14?
Oh. I was trying to, yeah, okay.
Is the main line.
Okay.
Well, that means that's what, since there's no RC on the end of it, I wonder, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, so, but anyway, so ButterFS has got a lot of performance and fixes and bug fixes that they are, that are going into the 3.15 kernel. And it says that this guy, Chris Mason, who's he's employed now with Facebook, they're beginning to use ButterFS. So it's just kind of... I think I posted that on Google+. I never thought I'd see the day when I put ButterFS and Facebook in the same sentence.
I don't know. But I think ZFS... ButterFS is cool. And one of the guys at work uses ButterFS, and whenever he has problems, I always bust his balls by using experimental file system, but.
Yeah.
Says the guy who had to switch his, can't use his work profile in his Chrome anymore because he runs Chrome unstable and something got hanked up and now it crashes every time. But so, but if I had my druthers, and if it was fully supported, I'd be using ZFS.
ZFS is.
But it's not supported. It's not fully supported in Linux.
Fully supported in BSD?
Oh, yeah. In FreeBSD.
Yeah. And it's rocking, I tell you. I don't know a lot about it, but you know, I just have one big tank in here. That's what it's called. I think you can name it something else. But anyway, the last news story I have, just to wrap up my portion of the news, you remember last week, Tony, we were talking about Mozilla and the guy, the founder, the new head of Mozilla, and it became known that back in 2008 he had made donations.
Well,
to California.
Well, he's always been very vocal about it.
Okay.
Because he's a Christian. Yeah. Oh. No, he's a Christian guy.
Okay. Yeah, and so apparently, there was a big furor about it.
I don't think it was a big furor about it. It was, What was that website?
I'm not sure.
Oh, I can't remember. But they had a thing pop up that if you go to their website with Firefox, it pops a thing up and says, did you know that the founder of the Mozilla Foundation did all this stuff, and we would prefer that if you visit our website, you use either Chrome OS or
IE.
Yeah, or Internet Explorer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I did not know that.
I forget what website it was that did that. That's why it was in the news last week.
Huh. I can't believe you missed that part of it. I suppose we did.
Yeah. But anyway, so he did step down. He stepped down this past week, and Mitchell Baker, who, she's the foundation co-founder and CEO, painted the move as a return to the foundation's core principles, noting that Ike had, is it Eich or Ike? I don't know how to pronounce his name. E-I-C-H. Made the decision for Mozilla and our community.
That's, I would say Ike.
Ike?
Is it?
Ike. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. So, anyway, but the big questions, and here are some of the tough questions. Does a man or a woman have the right to contribute to causes he believes in? And should those actions impact his work? Where do we draw the line and who says what the line is?
Well,
those are tough questions.
It is a tough question, and I believe that you have every right to your own beliefs, your own support of those beliefs, and whatever. Like, I believe he fully has the right to do that. But then I fully also have the right to believe other people have the same rights. And then there will also be consequences that come about because of the decisions you make.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the right to make those decisions, but then be aware that those decisions carry with them consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, see, I think the tough thing is if this guy, if his work at Mozilla and all of that, if he had done a lot of great things, and again, I'm saying if not as far as that he didn't, but I don't know what he had done there because I hadn't followed this much until last week when it came out. But, so if he's a quote unquote Christian, and that's been known for probably years because sometimes, people are very vocal about that. Well, but it hasn't impacted,
vocal about that.
But it hasn't impacted how he's treated employees or the things that he's done. See, it becomes very difficult then, I think, to say, well, you're out because of this thing.
Did the Mozilla Foundation make the contribution, or did he personally make
it? He did.
He personally
did.
Okay.
He did.
And does he allow his personal beliefs to influence what the Mozilla Foundation does?
See, that,
you know.
Well, look
as
at
long
hobby.
As you keep them separate and the Mozilla Foundation is doing what it needs to do to be a viable, productive member of a community, and his personal stuff is over here, as long as he keeps them separate,
And he doesn't discriminate against his employees. It's very tough. It is.
I agree.
For some people, it's very cut and dry, but I think you have to kind of step back and really look at the bigger picture here.
I think you do too. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a tough question.
Mark this date.
We actually agree more often.
We do. I mean, sometimes we don't, but we do, I think, on a fair number of things. But see, now contrast that with the Hobby Lobby company where they don't even want their employees to get, in their insurance to get like contraceptive coverage
Now that's bringing your personal beliefs into the company. I don't think that's kind of crazy. I think you need to suffer the consequences of your decisions then at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean?
I was there once. It's a huge store. They got one up, anyway, I don't go back there. Anyway, so that was my last news story, but I just thought it was kind of interesting, and it really is kind of a thought-provoking situation, you know, as far as this guy and maybe the contributions he's made to Mozilla.
Right.
And his personal beliefs.
I don't know. The government, never mind, because this is a Linux podcast, and we're going to get way off topic, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? I had another thing I wanted to mention. You know, last week we got fooled for the April Fools. You remember that in the show?
What?
Dowdle was trying to tell us that Chatter was trying to tell us that
Ubuntu's toolkit, or there was a toolbar toolbar.ubuntu.com.
Yeah, there was toolbar, and it was the April Fool's thing. Well, there was another one I saw on April Fool's, and it says that Facebook's going to buy Ubuntu.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was...
Do you know what the best April Fool's joke I saw was?
What was that?
This lady that got arrested because she called her daughter at university and said, oh, my God, there's a gunman on your campus. And she freaks out and calls 911. The daughter calls 911.
Oh, no.
So she gets all the SWAT there. They shut the school down.
Oh, my God. And that was supposed to be an April Fool's joke?
And the mom was just playing an April Fool's joke. They arrested her.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Wow. Where was the common sense?
Exactly. I mean, what are you doing? What are you thinking about, lady? Come on.
Yeah,
what
it seems fool. Like it's more, the more common thing is uncommon sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, I can't take the quote from my own. I heard that from the Everyday Linux.
Oh.
Well, that's all right. You can use it as long as you attribute it to where it
came from. How was it released? Was it released under a Creative Commons, or was it just released into the public domain? Or
that's a good question.
L-E. So anyway.
Wow.
You're pretty close, though.
Actually, I just added an extra L at the end. Because I already had the FFL.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't see that. Okay.
Anyway, great. Mary was
talking about kerfluffle.
Spelling problem.
Yeah, well, kerfluffle is not a word that we use too often. I'm kind of crestfallen about that.
Anyway,
right. Sorry to hear about your crestfallenness for the lack of the use of kerfluffle.
All right, what are we doing next now? We've thoroughly trashed the news.
Did you have any KDE stuff you want to talk about?
Only that... I believe that somebody, and I unfortunately don't have it available, but somebody was just gushing about the most recent Caligra Office release and how, well, it's kind of two parts to it. You've got the core Office components, you know, the database, the spreadsheet, the word processor and presentation, app. And then you've got these other tools that there's like a vector graphics editor. There's all this other stuff.
Wow.
And I guess the most recent release is really popping, I guess.
Huh.
Cool. So, so that came out. I think it was 2.8.1. And then of course, the thing we're all waiting for is the.
I have a question.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Who uses Caligra? Other than the freaking Caligra developers. Seriously.
I'm thinking
Do you ever use it?
Yeah. Let me see.
Do you ever use it?
Well, I just said yes.
Yeah. Not.
Have I ever used it?
No. Not do you experiment with it when there's a new release, but do you ever use it?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I did. I did a couple of times because I have got a problem on my workstation at home with LibreOffice where if I have a new document and I try to save as, it crashes. The only way to fix it is to get rid of my profile, which then gets rid of all my customization, my toolbar customizations and all that. And it really ticks me off.
Well, so then I start, one of those customizations causing the problem.
I start disliking LibreOffice. So I thought, you know, I'll try Apache OpenOffice. But because there's so much common code there, it still happened. And so Caligra, I don't think it happened in Caligra. Hmm. So.
So you just make the document in Caligra, then close it and open it in my game in OpenOffice. But
well, the thing about Caligra, and I think we've talked about this before, they follow the Lotus Symphony model where you've got your toolbars and things on the side, which I kind of like because when you talk about today's lap or you know screens,
they're all wide screens.
Yeah,
so you want extra space on the side.
Exactly. I mean, you look at Unity. I mean, they've done. You know, as far as placement of that, I think that makes a lot of sense to have it on the side. As long as it's convenient to everyone, you know. Well, your issue is not that, not the placement of that toolbar. Your issue is with Canonical.
Oh, yeah. You got a point there.
Okay. I had to just check with you. But anyway, so that's, my experience with Caligra. And of course, I continue, you know, I think next year, I've got a thing for, I'm going to confess this, you guys. I have a thing for KDE service menus. And, it's those little right-click menus that, right-click options. There's just tons of them.
Yeah.
And I'm going to learn how to write a service menu. And I think at the next week's PenguinCon, next week. Yeah, I'm going to learn it all this week. Next year's PenguinCon, I think I'm going to do a presentation on KDE service menus.
That would be cool.
How to put a custom one together.
Yeah.
So. Okay, I've just gone public with this commitment. I guess that means I have to do it.
One thing you posted on your Google Plus I thought was interesting was Bodega.
Yeah, Aaron Sego had posted that out there, and Bodega is kind of a new...
Bodega, that's a little store in...
Yeah, and it's a store that's got apps in it and things like that.
Yeah, it's a KDE.
It's being developed under the KDE umbrella, and so my comment was, whoa, it's KDE app that doesn't have a K in it.
Right.
But there are others, of course. Caligra.
Doesn't that start with a K?
No, it's a C.
I think it's K.
$5.
No, I'm
would have been the easiest $5.
I'm trolling.
I figured you were. But anyway, so that, I'm going to kind of keep an eye on that. I think it's kind of interesting. I just saw that.
All right.
All right. What do we got next?
Oh.
You know, I have one thing on my security bit.
Oh, yeah.
There is a malware that, what's going on here?
All right, I think that's...
you guys are talking?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's some IRC chatting going on. So
yeah.
Confused or distracted.
Matt and
anyway,
Matt
I found...
Matt and a friend.
There's another malware out there that changes the DNSs on your router.
What?
Did you hear about that?
No.
No,
yeah,
this is
what is it? It's a
router
malware.
Vulnerability?
No, it's not. What it is, it's malware that gets on your computer. It finds your router, and then it tries all the default passwords against all
routers.
Oh,
like admin password.
Yeah, or blank login and password, or admin as the password.
Oh, you know, wow.
That's Linksys.
Right. Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And for Netgear, it's admin.
Right.
And all sorts of things like that. So what it does is it gets in there, and then it changes your DNSs to a bad DNS server.
So they can spoof all kinds of stuff.
Right. And they've done that. They've spoofed Google. So you think you're going to Google and you're into your G+, and it says, oh wait, you have to log in. You type in using your password and blam, they have your login info. Because they're phishing. It's a phishing site.
Yep.
I saw that.
Just like
and
that blam.
And it'll hit, it does. And one, but the thing is, one Windows computer at your house does this. Then all computers in the house is affected.
Yes.
Even Linux computers.
Well, those networks or those router companies, you know what they need to do is they need to have it built in that, that's your default password, but then it's scripted that it forces you to change it.
I agree. That's the way to get around
it. Well,
you
paused though, Tony. You paused. What's your hesitation?
For people that don't know anything about routers, that all they do is plug it in and want to go. Then
they shouldn't own a router.
Exactly. Thank you.
I'm not kidding you. You should then just take a cable, plug it into your laptop, and plug it into the cable companies.
You know, I agree with you, because the cable company will supply you with a router, and those won't have default passwords, or they'll walk you through changing it.
Or like the way AT&T does it.
Or their gateway.
You know, the serial number of the individual unit on the side of the box on a big sticker?
Yeah.
That's your admin password.
That's your default admin password.
Right.
Unless you're standing there, you don't got it.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's what they should start doing instead.
Yeah, exactly. Put passwords. A big sticker on there, bam. And each one's different and unique, because with the AT&T, with the routers,
that's about a nine-digit number.
It's a huge number.
Yeah.
And it's random. It's not brute forceable, and it's the serial number of the box.
And they should stick one letter in there.
Letters in there.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, it's a hex, because it's a serial. Yeah, because it uses the MAC address
number,
right, or something like that.
No, it's longer than that.
Speaking of hex, that made me think of movies, and then that made me think of gin.
Okay.
I was just looking that up.
Gin, J-I-N-N, it's a new movie.
Oh. Yeah, it's filmed in Detroit.
Filmed in Detroit. Filmed in Michigan? Filmed in Detroit.
Yeah, well, they have scenes outside.
Okay.
That are away from Michigan or Detroit. But
we got a beach here. Belle Isle.
Not those scenes that I've seen.
That beach. Okay.
Anyway, I looked up the trailer last night.
Well, they could have filmed the one on Lake St. Clair, though.
Yeah.
Does it have big rock overhangs?
No, they'd have to go much further north for that.
Okay. All right. Back on topic.
I think it's over on Lake Michigan.
Lake Michigan's all sand on that side. Oh, maybe on Superior.
Okay. Yeah, Superior has a lot of rocks.
All right. Well, going back to the hex, so that number is a hexadecimal number. Right. See how isn't that great? We just circled right back to where we were.
So that's how the manufacturers
would
be able to avoid this problem.
Yeah.
But say you already have one of these routers to save you from it. First, you need to go in and see if your DNS has been changed.
Good luck for all those new people that don't understand all this.
That's not happening.
Well, I have a link in the show notes, so it'll take you over to that where they talk about it.
And, okay.
So you go in and check to see if your DNS has been changed, and then you change that default password to something different.
Where I stay.
It has to be changed.
Yeah, where I stay, I did change the default password.
Ah.
I can't remember what I set it to. I can't get into the control settings. So whenever it has a problem, I just reboot it.
Oh, factory reset?
No. Oh. I just unplug it.
And
count 10, plug it back in.
Okay, there you go. That'll fix it. Well, you can always go back to the factory.
I know.
But anyway. Well, Tony, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing that story.
You're welcome.
What do we got next? I've been threatening to come back with an Is It Alive or some kind of crazy little trivia thing like I did earlier. I think I'll do that. Maybe for PenguinCon. I think that'll be a fun time.
Ooh, artist participation. Let's come with the artist participation one.
Yeah.
We could get a volunteer to come in, or we could do a census.
Yeah, we have a couple buttons, and we have like a family.
I think the easiest way to do it is census.
Or that, or we could have like a Family Feud style thing where we have named five Linux commands that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have a team. Oh, you know, that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
The hardest part would be to get those buttons that would just automatically go off. Where would you get those?
Nah, we just need something that makes it
noise. Oh yeah, you just have to go out there and slap your hand or something.
I'll get like air horns or something. Blew a bigger button on the top of the air horn.
All right. Well, and then
some little streamers on it, so whichever streamers go out first.
So we're talking about PenguinCon.
Mm-hmm.
That's a convention the first weekend in May in the Detroit area. This year, it's in Southfield at the Westin, right?
I think so. You're asking us? Yeah.
Yeah. We are scheduled. We're going to have a show there, as we're just saying. It's 9 a.m. on Sunday morning, Eastern time. And as long as the internet's working, we're going to be doing a Google Hangout, like we do every week.
And you're going to want to be there or listen in.
No, right. PenguinCon is a fun time.
If you can science fiction and Linux.
If you can come to Detroit for that and free beer.
Yeah,
free beer, free food in the con suite. No other cons that I know of have free food and free beer in the con suite.
No, but you know, it's not free to attend.
No,
it's yeah, not. You got to pay to attend.
You got to, right. you do need to pay. It's, if you buy it at the door, it's $50. I think it's right now 40.
No, I think April 1st was the end of 45. Pre.
Oh, you can't pre-reg at all
right,
anymore?
I don't think you pre-reg anymore. Oh, so now it's $50
again, goddammit.
I pre-registered at $45.
Yeah.
They have this ribbon thing where everybody puts ribbons on there. Yeah. And then, so you buy ribbons. Like, we bought one for our group and we hand them out to people. And they have contests of how long you can get the ribbon line chain to go on your...
I've stopped that.
There's people who have made vests. Out of the ribbons.
Yes.
From year to year, they'll take all the ribbons.
I'm going to buy 500 SMLR ribbons. I'm going to make an SMLR vest. Yeah, I've decided to go with the minimalist look. I'm having no ribbons on mine.
Right. You know, this is the first show of the month. So
the convention scene.
Convention scene. You know what?
You ready, Mary?
Yeah, this week, actually, up in...
This week is NELF.
Yeah, New England Linux Fest.
It's happening right now as we speak.
As we speak.
9 o'clock.
That's right. In New England.
Yeah.
And it's all
Boston,
about Linux.
At Harvard. Cambridge.
Yeah, okay.
I thought it was Cambridge. Or it's Harvard in Cambridge. Yeah.
It's right across the Charles River from Boston. So, and I only know that because I was in an office tower in there at a law firm once. And you could see the Charles River and then it's Cambridge right across. So.
Very
the
cool.
The Coop is actually in Boston, though, I think. I bought a shirt at the Coop. Actually, a hooded sweatshirt at the Coop once.
The Cooper?
No, the Coop, the Harvard Cooperative. It's their bookstore.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, you said that before, and we were giving you a hard time about some left-wing, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what else we got?
I guess then we're on to listener feedback.
Okay.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is... 313-626-9140.
Feedback. As I had mentioned earlier, one of our emails was asking us about our, our firewalls that we use, and see if we could talk a little bit about the differences between them.
Yeah.
I know a couple other podcasts, the reason we hadn't done it in the past is because other podcasts have done similar things. So we could just make a whole link list of go listen to this podcast show and, but what I'll do is I'll make up some whys I chose what I did, and a little bit of differences that I can see. I know that the, Everyday Linux guys, they call theirs a Boris box.
Boris box?
Yeah, because Boris. there was a guy when they first used one of them. The admin, the guy that would get in and configure their firewall was Boris.
His name was Boris.
So they would call him Boris.
They would sell these firewalls to people and they called them Boris boxes because Boris set them all up. And then when they needed to do, when you needed something else added to it, like a port, a hole punched in it, a new port added or whatever, you would call them up. And they would transfer to Boris. They would transfer to Boris. And they said, when you were talking to Boris, you would say, Boris, this is what I need done. And then you would hear, click, 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 and he would say, done. And then you could do it. You would log into your box.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Boris box.
Huh. So that was Joe that emailed us asking about our firewalls. So I use IPFire and, it won't be the next show, but sometime in the future we'll talk about that.
Was Scott Dowdle's, was that last week when I wasn't here? Did you guys talk about that?
Which one?
The one where he was about 30 minutes in and told Mary about Kubuntu or something?
We did talk about that.
Yeah, right? We did.
Never mind, I'm behind.
PenguinCon schedule. So it'll be 9 a.m. we're going to be on. I am also doing, on Saturday, I'm doing a talk about GNU encryption, and that'll be 3 p.m. And again, I'm going to try to do that on Google on air. So if you happen to be 3 p.m. Eastern time, if you happen to be by a computer, you can listen in on my talk.
3 p.m. when?
Eastern, Saturday.
Okay, PenguinCon weekend?
Yeah, PenguinCon. Okay. So May 3rd.
If you happen to be near a computer. Yeah, I think that might be possible.
May 2nd? Or yeah, something that can get YouTube. Then you can just watch in on my podcast, or my show, talk, whatever you call that.
Okay.
And then I think at 5 o'clock, they're doing an encryption panel, or crypto party panel, that's what they're going to call it. So it's going to, I'm going to be sitting on there. I think Kevin O'Brien's going to be sitting in there. And with that, we're going to talk about.
I can come heckle you.
Yeah. And then we're going to talk about, we're going to do, a pseudo key signing party. So come with your, GNU PG keys.
Pseudo.
Pseudo. GNU? So like a.
PGP?
GNU PGP. No, pseudo, like a sort of.
GNU.
Oh. Oh.
A sort of. Not pseudo.
PGP party. Okay, okay, okay.
A key signing party.
I was like, what is this? Is this a new key I haven't heard of?
It is, man.
No, it's an informal key party that, because I don't think now we have enough time to, really coordinate a formal key signing party. But I did hear on HPR they were talking about running a key signing party at, was it FOGDEM?
All you need to run a key signing party is a space. People show up with their keys and a driver's license.
You've just taken all the fun out of it.
No, yeah, but you have to announce it. You have to get it together. I think it was FOGDEM did it, is they had everybody ahead of time. They had them all on a list. Everybody stood in line, and you went around in a circle and wrote down each other's keys, and then they hand you a piece of paper with the key on it. The whole idea is you don't have your computer there because then it's a vector. Somebody could hack you while you're there.
And you could be struck by a key there.
Down. I am not typing in freaking keys. That is not happening.
Anyway,
won't see you there, Matt.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, those business card paper things you can buy at the office store.
Yeah.
I'm going to do all my information on a business card with a key fingerprint on there and hand that out to everybody. So that's what everybody should do. Get a business card, print it out.
How about typing your
bring
key?
Bring it with.
That's not how bad.
Why don't you
I've
put
had a key for over a year and you haven't signed it yet.
Put it as one of those little QR codes.
Yeah.
And then you can just scan it and you end up getting it right then and there.
Wow.
Okay. All right. And we'll be talking and actually at our podcast at PenguinCon.
You'll be a Luddite and a technologist.
Thank you for letting me finish my sentence.
You're welcome.
Well, you can be, the Linux Luddites. It's a podcast.
Is it really?
Yeah, you do that.
I did not. I'll fit right in there.
We actually run their promo every week.
A couple places you'll fit right in.
Matt, apparently you don't listen to the end of the show because we run their promo every week.
I don't. I never listen to the end.
Because he does the show. He lives it. He lives it, and then he doesn't want to relive it.
That's right.
All right. Well, and I'll be covering a nice command. I wouldn't call it exactly a command line tool, but I'll be covering at our at PenguinCon. I'll be covering a nice NCurses or curses based. Yeah, a curses based system monitoring tool. Yes, it's really actually I think it's fantastic from just a general system monitoring perspective. So we'll be talking about that. We could talk about
live system monitoring.
Yes, live system monitoring. So
for you to look at.
Yeah.
And monitor your system.
Yeah, man.
Through this tool.
We'll be talking about that at the podcast, so it's kind of cool. I mean, we've got HTOP. We'll be talking about this other tool.
Oh, I found out HTOP does something hinky with memory, though. Like, it's not a great tool to use if you're watching memory.
Oh, you're talking about the slider at the top?
Things like that, but.
Yeah, I use HTOP.
No, those are CPUs. In HTOP.
I'm pretty sure memory is in
there. Oh, they have, the bottom one, but the top, it's
the CPU, the sliders,
top,
yeah, and then swap.
And then the memory is down below it.
Okay. All right, well, I guess we've come to what now?
Featured music of the week.
Mary suggested it. It's Delirium by
For
No
you,
Creeps.
Matt.
By who?
By who?
No Creeps.
The lead singer for Journey. Who's the lead singer for Journey?
That guy.
That guy.
He sounds, his voice is too much like him.
It's the other guy. All right.
Sting?
All right.
Sting. Oh, my God.
I think we're embarrassing ourselves. We've gotten to the point, so it must be time to end the show. Okay.
It's Steve Perry.
Yes. He sounds too Steve Perry to me.
Okay. We'll let him know.
I totally disapprove.
Anyway, so I guess we're coming to the end of the show.
End of the show.
Yeah, you've been listening to Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 123.
Colonel Kerfluffle.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, have a good fortnight. See you next fortnight.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher Haunty Magoo 5150 and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.